Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly. What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everybody. The 4 o'clock hour here in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. The sun is shining. We're having a great day. And I'm still just pissed off about this story. Allison Martin out there at BuzzFeed, who has reported that AAA, the Automobile Association of America, has determined that we pot smokers are terrible, terrible drivers. We're terrible people. And we've got to oppose marijuana legalization. According to their spokesman, has some really terrible things to say about marijuana. I'm trying to get down here to this. According to Jake Nelson, director of traffic safety advocacy and research at AAA, he says, quote, "We shouldn't be legalizing a drug we don't fully understand. If you're impaired by marijuana, you're less likely to be able to evade a crash. You are slower to respond to get out of the way of a driver coming down the way towards you. It will contribute to a crash whether you are responsible for a crash," end quote. Okay, so here's the problem with this fallacy of logic here. Legalizing marijuana does not legalize stoned driving. These people act as if legalization invents cars and weed. This is one of the, I always say this every time this comes up. People have been smoking pot and driving for as long as there's been cars and weed. Did any of you see Easy Rider, for God's sake? 1969, Peter Fonda and Jack Nicholson. I mean, right there, right in front of you. And to point out that someone who's impaired on marijuana is less likely to be able to evade a crash. I'll go ahead and accept that. If you are actively stoned to the bone, your reaction times are slowed. If you are actively stoned to the bone, you are less likely to be able to evade a crash. But you know what? You're less, a whole lot less likely to evade the crash and far more likely to cause the crash if you're actively impaired on alcohol. Now, AAA is not out there advocating for a return to alcohol prohibition. AAA is not out there advocating for all bars to have mandatory breathalyzer valets. No, they seem to be okay with the idea that alcohol is a legal substance. People can use it, and then they should be responsible about whether or not they get behind the wheel. Why can't that apply to marijuana, a substance far safer than alcohol, far less impairing than alcohol, and one for which the detection of its metabolite in one's system is in no way an indicator that they are a safety risk or a crash risk on the road? It just boggles the mind how people can readily accept the existence of alcohol without even blinking an eye, not even batting an eyelash about it, accept that alcohol exists, except that wrecks are going to be caused by alcohol, except that we're going to have lots and lots of deaths on the roadways because of alcohol. Now, again, you're the AAA, you're the automobile club, right? If you are opposing marijuana legalization based on the idea that marijuana legalization is going to increase the amount of stoned drivers out there, people who are actively stoned on marijuana, then it is the height of hypocrisy for you to just willingly accept without comment the proliferation of alcohol throughout this country and the growing acceptance of its advertising and promotion. Just this year, the NFL has decided, after years of banning alcohol ads, I mean, they have beer ads, right? but they don't do hard liquor. They don't do like the Jack Daniels and stuff. This year they're going to. They're going to allow hard alcohol advertising on NFL telecasts. Now, I don't have a problem with that. Hey, you want to sell your alcohol, it's a legal substance, great, go ahead. But I refuse to accept this double standard that allows the promotion and glorification of alcohol alongside the demonization and shunning of cannabis. It makes no logical sense. It makes no policy sense. It makes no medical sense. It makes no scientific sense. It is literally nonsensical to have these double standards in place. Now, if you want to make the rule that, hey, we shouldn't promote marijuana, we shouldn't advertise marijuana, we should keep marijuana behind closed doors and opaque windows and never let the children see an adult with marijuana. Hey, if that's going to be the standard, great, but set that standard for alcohol. Give it a shot, AAA. Put out a little announcement about how you're going to be lobbying state legislators to mandate alcohol breathalyzer valets. That any place that sells alcohol, restaurant, bar, tavern, pub, whatever it is, if it sells alcohol, they must take the keys from people who come into their establishment, and they cannot give those keys back until someone blows below 0.08 on a breathalyzer. Let's see how far you get with that one. All right, more marijuana news coming up right after this break.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of The Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll receive over 20 hours of original first-hour podcasts, plus other materials only available to paid subscribers. Or, for just $9.99 a month, become a VIP patron. You'll get over 40 hours of podcasts for the complete program, including Toker Talk Radio, plus ad-free downloads of the segments heard on The Marijuana Agenda. Plus, VIPs get exclusive access to the video replay of the two-hour live stream show and downloads of the spreadsheets and charts I provide from my years of curating marijuana data sets. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at MJAgenda.com.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, The Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Hey, Joey! I got some stuff you just gotta try.
What is it?
Pot.
You know, marijuana.
Oh, well, I don't know.
What, chicken?
Joey's in a jam. What should he do? Cake.
Get a pizza.
Excellent.
Get a pizza.
Get real.
Get it.
You got it. Let's see if Joey's that smart.
I'm not chicken. You're a turkey.
He's right. Drug dealers are dorks. Don't even talk to him.
Cowabunga!
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to The Marijuana Agenda every weekday at MJAgenda.com.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Freedom Leaf Preview with Steve Bloom from Freedom Leaf Magazine. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Farrakh has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Smells like a skunk. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. Continuing our discussion of the Automobile Association of America, AAA, and their reefer mad can of bigotry. They are currently actively opposing and lobbying against marijuana legalization. This was revealed today by Allison Martin, a reporter at BuzzFeed News. And I want to tip my hat, my non-existent hat, to the members of our chat room who are discussing the situation. And I want to especially shout out to Jackie Newberry, who's being far more level-headed and mature than I am on this. Because I've been doing this for a few years now, and it's like I've heard all the replies and the excuses and the bullshit that the opponents of legalization put out. And sometimes I jump right from news story to outrage. I got like a turbo boost, man. I just boom, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, right? But she does point out that perhaps rather than boycotting AAA, the thing to do is to contact them and politely educate and inform them about their ignorance. Politely show them this National Highway Traffic Safety Administration study from 2015 showing zero difference between sober drivers and THC drivers when you account for age and gender. We could show them that science. We could show them the science from the National Highway, the statements for the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration on this from various medical journals. Paul Armentano, probably the most educated person in the world on this subject. We could have him write a letter. And so it's not a bad idea, a great idea, if you're of that inclination to calm yourself down and try to politely educate the ignorant, knock yourself out. The website address, or like the address you want to send it to, is memberrelations@national.aaa.com. That's memberrelations@national.aaa.com. And it's a good idea, definitely, especially if you're a member. You know, write in with your member number and let them know that you are offended by this. Educate them as to the science on marijuana and driving, that they have nothing to fear here. I've tweeted a couple of graphics now. Most recently, I tweeted out a chart showing the differences between Colorado, Washington, and Idaho compared to the U.S. national average on traffic fatalities, and how Idaho, big ass prohibition state, the only prohibition island in the West there, that Idaho has a far higher rate of traffic fatalities than do Washington or Colorado. And both Washington and Colorado for a decade or so have been below the national average. I sent a link out to a recent report, a meta-analysis showing that the change in marijuana reform in the states that legalize or have medical marijuana has had no statistical impact on traffic fatalities or traffic crash rates or anything like that. It's definitely recommended. If you're in that, like I said, if you've got that mindset to try to educate these people, go for it. I'm going to send a letter after this show. I'll put together stats and links and be all friendly and polite about it. But I can tell you what the answer is going to be. Folks, these decisions aren't made based on a careful and thoughtful review of the existing science. These are the people at AAA making political decisions. They're making political decisions on this. This is all about politics. This is an irrational decision based on them weighing what the potential outcomes are. And I believe AAA looked at this and said, hey, well, look, if we come out for marijuana legalization, they'll say that we're trying to increase road hazards. So I never expected AAA to say, yes, legalization, what a great idea. I could point out that the places that have legalized or have medical marijuana show reductions in DUIs with respect to drugs and alcohol. We could show that information. But we also want to point out for these deniers at AAA that the actual use of marijuana by people is not leading to more wrecks. And I'm afraid they're just going to come back because, again, this is just a political decision on their part. They're not going to read what I say or what you say or what you forward or the links and say, oh, you know what? Gee whiz, we made a mistake. According to the science, marijuana drivers are just fine. We don't expect them to be pro-legalization, but maybe we can get them to the neutral stance, get them to where they're neutral. But I feel that politically what they've decided here is that by being neutral, they'd be seen as being complicit. And if they don't actively oppose marijuana legalization, it threatens them with some of their lobbying, with some of their political connections. You know, AAA is always lobbying for things like, things that benefit drivers, you know, lower gas taxes and such. And maybe they're just doing this based on trying to protect some of their political capital. I think what is going to make a difference to AAA is blowback. I think it's the loss of membership, especially membership in the Western states, as people who are law-abiding, responsible marijuana consumers react to this outrageous cannabigotry, this discrimination against our people. They're not saying that marijuana drivers can be impaired, that it's possible they could be impaired. They're just saying legalization leads to more wrecks. And there's no stats, facts, science, reason, or logic to back that up. There is nothing. This is just cannabigotry. Flat out bigotry and discrimination against our people. Let me go back to the story here, because there's a couple other quotes that are quite telling in this. From Allison Martin at Alyson Martin, Allison Martin on BuzzFeed. She said the spokesperson made allusion to the fact that it doesn't, quote, if it doesn't, hold on. I get so worked up, man. I get ahead of myself sometimes. Quote, it doesn't matter if you test saliva, urine, or blood. There is no single test that can alone determine impairment. Right. There is no test that will determine your impairment on marijuana or opiates or benzodiazepines or antihistamines, etc., etc. In fact, the only drug for which we have an impairment threshold that guarantees you're too impaired to drive and is scientifically somewhat valid is alcohol. Alcohol's the outlier. Alcohol's the weird one in the drug pantheon. The one we actually can test for in a dose-dependent body relationship here, we can pretty much say that you're too impaired to drive if you're above 0.08. Now, I can even argue that. I believe that there are people who above 0.08 are just fine to drive, and that we should only determine impairment by objective observation of the driver at the time. I think it is disgusting and a violation of the spirit of the Fourth Amendment for us to have to surrender our bodily fluids to determine our fitness for a licensed privilege in our state. That's a whole nother rant. As far as I'm concerned, Dr. King, when he said we should be judged by the content of the character, not the color of our skin, I think that would also apply that we shouldn't be judged by the contents of our bladder. Like, our bladder shouldn't really determine whether or not we're good enough to drive or good enough to work or good enough to go to school or good enough to get insurance benefits or good enough to get welfare benefits or anything like that. But again, that's a whole nother rant. What it comes down to in this is the society's inability to comprehend that we would allow marijuana to be legal without having some magic number to bust stone drivers. And what it gets down to is wanting to punish people before they commit a crime, before they've done something wrong. If someone's so stoned that they're unsafe to drive a car, you'll know it. You'll be able to see it. You'll be able to detect it. Why these people are so upset about not having a magic breathalyzer number for cannabis is because without it, they can't catch us. And doesn't that in and of itself say something about how safe a driver we are? It reminds me of a stand-up comedian who once said, drug tests are cheating. Sometimes you need to smoke weed just to have to scrape up enough dignity to put on the paper hat and ask people if they want fries with that. And that if you can go to work and you're high and your manager can't tell, what's the problem? Well, here again, what is the problem? Well, the idea, they'll be stoned and then there'll be a risk and they'll cause a wreck. Look, people that are stoned don't typically drive. In the tests where they try to do simulators, where they're doing research on this, and they try to get people stoned to the bone and put them behind the wheel, a lot of the subjects will say, look, I'm too stoned to drive. You'll have to do this test sometimes else. They have to force them to get behind the wheel because they don't want to be reckless.
All we want to do is pump you up.
I can't imagine what these people think has been happening for the past 80 years as people have been smoking marijuana in state after state after state. There hasn't been a massive, massive problem with stoned wrecks, has there? What makes you think legalization will cause one? Yeah, people who want to follow a law are somehow going to be more reckless.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Oh, hey everybody, it's me, Mr. Bell. Hey! And you know, when you're in the entertainment business, you have to be traveling coast to coast all the time.
Say, Mr. Bell, you've got a long trip ahead of you. You'll need something to help keep you awake.
Well, I've been really trying to cut down on my coffee lately.
Then how about some drugs?
Oh, no! Drugs are bad, and you kids out there should never, ever use them.
Oh, come on, try some. So remember, kids, say...
Oh, no!
To drugs.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at mjagenda.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Veterans of Compassion with the Veterans Cannabis Group. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. Arr. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. A story coming to us from Eli Harrington. He was on our show just a while ago for our Northeast Cannabis Chronicle. He is publishing out at HeadyVermont.com. And the story out there is Vermont DMV publicizes bust of truck driver using state legal CBD product. And the report says that during the routine inspection of a tractor trailer unit's driver, a Vermont DMV inspector discovered an oil and vaporizer that contained CBD oil, a non-psychoactive cannabis compound that has been considered legal to move across state lines. Let's put the brakes on this report right away, and I got to criticize Eli on this point. Nobody has considered it legal to drive CBD across state lines. Nobody. Now, the purveyors of this CBD oil, the hemp oil hucksters, will often say, oh, our hemp-derived CBD is legal in all 50 states. It's not. The DEA has pointed this out numerous times. All extractions from the cannabis plant, except that which comes from stock or seed, is marijuana. It doesn't have to be specifically listed. They don't have to list cannabidiol, cannabichromine, cannabigerol. They don't have to list all the CBs. The fact that it came from a cannabis plant makes it illegal marijuana, period. The only exception is stuff that comes from stalks and seeds. And CBD does not come in any reliably measurable quantity from seeds and stems. Now, CBD does come from resin, and resin does stick to seeds and stems, but resin is explicitly defined by the DEA and the Controlled Substance Act. Anything that comes from resin is a controlled substance. So no, it has not been considered legal to move CBD across state lines. Now, the DMV responded with the Section 1308 of the drug code. This is the new drug code that was put forth by the DEA defining marijuana extracts, and points out that a commercial driver's license is a federal license, not a state license, so it doesn't matter what Vermont law may or may not say about medical CBD. This Section 1308 is also causing some confusion within this article, because in this article, they report that in late 2016, the Drug Enforcement Agency issued a statement that caused confusion and concern throughout the cannabis community. Specifically, the definition seemed to indicate that now all cannabis-derived products and materials, regardless of whether those substances include psychoactive THC or non-psychoactive compounds like CBD, would be considered a Schedule I substance. No! It's not now cannabis-derived products are illegal. It's they've always been illegal. Man, this whole story about the Section 1308 has invoked more confusion than it solved. Here's the deal. People saw this new definition come across, Section 1308, that came up with a code number. See, now when the DEA seizes shit, they gotta write it all down. And they got little code numbers for everything. Oh, we got some ecstasy, we got some fentanyl, we got some cocaine, and they all have a code number that goes with them, right? Now, marijuana has always had a code number because it's another schedule controlled substance, right? So it's got a code number, whatever the number is. Recently, this late 2016, the DEA, having seized so many different types of illegal marijuana, marijuana flower, marijuana oil, marijuana hash, marijuana keef, marijuana edibles, all these different marijuana things they're seizing, meant that when they'd get their little code number, that code number could apply to a bale of flour, a dollop of oil, a whole plate of brownies, right? So this code was not breaking things down into enough categories for them to make intelligent decisions. And again, I use that term very loosely, intelligent decisions at the DEA, but still, the one code wasn't matching all the different things they were seizing. So in late 2016, they came up with this new code for marijuana extracts. This was not the DEA suddenly making marijuana extracts illegal. They were already illegal. They were already a part of marijuana. All this was a coding change, a paperwork change that made it so they could keep track of marijuana separate from marijuana extracts. So when this article says now they've defined it as illegal, no, they've always been illegal. They just come up with a new way to code it. That's all. So don't believe the hype from these hemp oil hucksters that are telling you that CBD oil is legal in all 50 states and you can have CBD oil anywhere and it doesn't matter if you show a cop your CBD oil because everybody loves CBD, it's all from hemp, it's okay. You're going to get busted. You're going to get your stuff seized. You might get arrested and locked up over this stuff. And currently this commercial driver in Vermont is going to have to go through all of this. Now that's one aspect of the story. The one aspect of the story is, once again, somebody believed the hemp oil hucksters, and once again, a state has to show us that, no, CBD oil is illegal, and we can bust you for it. But there's another angle on this story, and this is the angle that Hedy Vermont is kind of highlighting, and I like the fact they're highlighting this part. The detention for this driver who was caught with the cannabidiol oil took place on June 8th. They didn't put this Facebook post out till today, till the 20th. So they sat on this story for 12
days before doing anything with it. What was so important to get this story out now? Well, tomorrow, Vermont lawmakers are scheduled to reconvene in Montpelier for the special budget session, and cannabis legalization is going to be back on the agenda. Remember, the governor of Vermont vetoed the legalization that was passed by the state and Senate of Vermont because he didn't feel it punished people enough. Yeah, the Vermont legalization didn't punish people who'd give to minors and so forth. So he wants all sorts of changes, like criminalizing people that smoke marijuana in an enclosed space near their minor and all sorts of other penalties. But he has indicated that if the legislature goes forward with these changes, he'll sign legalization. The legislature said, all right, we'll give in to your changes. So this session tomorrow could be the session where they finally hammer out a workable legalization policy that the governor will sign. Now you got to question the coincidence of the Vermont Department of Motor Vehicles releasing this information 12 days after the fact, but one day before we get together and talk about this stuff. This is another case of these government bureaucrats, especially these ones in the rehab areas and the DMV areas of our state governments, just evoking this reefer madness, this insanity about marijuana. And the CBD oil thing, trying to make that, this has got to backfire. This has just got to backfire in the Vermont DMV, because I think the public now is starting to get the idea about CBD, that it's non-psychoactive, that it helps people with seizures and so forth. Now, this driver said he was using it to reduce anxiety, you know, so he could have a more calm effect. We know that the CBD does not impair anyone in any measurable fashion that would make them, you know, a risk behind the wheel. So as this story gets publicity, I think a lot of people are going to say, well, wait a minute, why are you busting this guy? We're a medical marijuana state in Vermont. We're about to be a legalization state. And we're talking about a CBD oil that's legal even in Utah. Even in the South, CBD oil is legal. So I can think of no benefit to the Vermont DMV's public relations, to the public safety on the roads, by highlighting this case. The only benefit I see is, again, that political benefit. I see a political benefit by the DMV trying to scare people about marijuana, and I think it is going to backfire on them, and backfire badly. People know that this is not impairing. People know that this is a medicine. And it's going to be interesting to see how these sorts of laws change as we continue to legalize THC marijuana. I mean, once the state passes, I mean, and it looks primed to pass in Vermont, once they pass their marijuana legalization, you've got to ask, if we're going to allow THC marijuana, why would we have restrictions on CBD, and why would we have restrictions on hemp? A lot of people don't recognize that part of it, that when you legalize marijuana, you don't necessarily legalize hemp. Washington State legalized marijuana in 2012. Washington State has had licensed THC-producing cannabis growers with huge-ass farms all throughout that state for a couple of years now, producing all the marijuana you want with as much THC, man, up to 28, 30, 33% THC in some cases. But if they grew any of that marijuana with less than 0.3% THC, they'd be breaking the law up until recently. That's right. Washington State has just barely legalized industrial hemp. They had legal recreational pot for a couple years. They had medical pot for a couple decades before they legalized the kind of cannabis that can't possibly get you high. Isn't that wild? Imagine that it was legal in your state to go buy Bacardi 151 rum, but if they caught you with O'Doul's near beer, you'd be breaking the law. That's how illogical and insane our marijuana laws are. That we went so far as to define two different kinds of marijuana, the kind that gets you high and the kind that doesn't. And in order to legalize the kind that doesn't get you high, you have to make a specific law just for that. You can't just legalize the stuff that gets you high, even though we're still talking about the same plant. Remember that. Hemp and marijuana are the same species. One is cultivated for low THC and more industrial uses. The other one's cultivated for flower production and more THC and medical uses. But they're not different plants any more than a working sheepdog is a different species than a toy chihuahua lapdog. They're the same species. They just have different functions. And wouldn't it be weird to ban just big pit bulls, but or to allow pit bulls, but then chihuahuas would be banned? Wouldn't that be stupid? That's what we're doing with hemp and marijuana right now. All right, look, we got to take a break. And when we come back, we'll have more from the wide world of weed right here on the Marijuana Agenda.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. If you're an organization or business looking to promote your brand, we have sponsorship patronage available at mjagenda.com. Sponsorship includes 15 and 30 second ad breaks and 6 minute interviews on the podcast, depending on sponsorship level, which begins at $19.99 a month. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at mjagenda.com.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
McGruff here. If someone asks you to try drugs, think of me and say what I'd say. And to help you, have one of these masks.
Well, thanks, McGruff.
Now, what are you going to say if someone asks you to try drugs?
My mom and dad told me not to, and I wouldn't lie to them.
Sensational.
Don't use drugs.
Here's how you can get a free mask. And on the back are more ways to say no and help me take a bite out of crime.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at mjagenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Police for Reform with Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everybody. I want to talk a little bit about fentanyl in this segment. We had a story in the news out of the Cincinnati area where the coroner in Hamilton County, that's the county Cincinnati's in, the coroner there says that synthetic opiates like fentanyl have been found in marijuana. Now, if you don't know, fentanyl is 50 to 100 times more powerful than morphine. It's a synthetic opiate. And the coroner there says, quote, we have seen fentanyl mixed with cocaine. We have also seen fentanyl mixed with marijuana. But she did not specify how many cases involved marijuana mixed with a synthetic opiate. This is with respect to 297 overdose deaths so far in Hamilton County this year by suspected opioid overdose. But out of those 297, she can't tell you how many cases involved marijuana with a synthetic opiate. Now, I've tracked down a few of these stories over the months where the cops or the coroners say, oh, there's this terrible problem. There's fentanyl in the marijuana. And then they do a little digging and they say, oh, well, yeah, it turns out they lied. They said they had only smoked marijuana, but then when we asked them a little more deeply, it turned out they had taken some pills. They had used some heroin or whatever. So we have yet to have anybody come up with definitive evidence that shows us, yes, we took this marijuana to the lab. This marijuana was shown to have fentanyl in it. And the person that overdosed on opioids only took this marijuana laced with fentanyl. We don't have any case that has shown that definitively. But what troubles me the most about this is trying to parse the implied logic in their statements. The coroner there says it's nearly impossible to tell which drugs are mixed with a synthetic opioid. So essentially, the message we're trying to get out there is if you're using any form of street drugs, count on them having some form of synthetic opioid mixed in. We can't tell you for sure until we test the blood of someone who has died or any of the drugs seized by law enforcement. Okay. And then in another story that I had read on this, this is the story. There was another quote in here that just blew my mind, where she says, quote, just don't use it. Just don't use it. That's all we can tell you. And we can't say it enough. Just say no. Just say no to the drugs. There's no need for us to go any further than that. Just say no. Because that worked so well in the 80s. Remember? Remember how Just Say No stopped everyone from using drugs? I love it when these people say things like this, like, well, we got to tell the heroin users out there that the street drugs are loaded with fentanyl, so just don't use any heroin anymore. As if that's how addiction works. As if people with addiction problems make rational decisions based on the possible consequences of their actions. Well, gee, I wanted to get high on heroin today, but doggone it, they say it might have fentanyl in it. So I'm just going to quit doing heroin. I'm just going to stop. Yeah, the addiction itself was pretty bad, and, you know, I was having all sorts of withdrawals and stuff. But now that you said there's fentanyl involved, I'm just going to quit. That's what I'll do. I'll just quit. That doesn't happen, folks. If it does, it's rare. It's an incredibly rare miracle that it happens. The nature of dependence, the nature of addiction, the nature of these drug problems is defined by your inability to make rational and sensible decisions based on consequence. That's the whole point of being an addict. You don't make intelligent decisions. And for her to say there's no way for us to know until we seize the drugs, or there's no way for us to know unless we test the blood of someone who's died. Well, sure, there's a way to know. There's a very easy way to know if these drugs have any fentanyl in them. Right now, I could leave this studio, walk 6 blocks down Division Street, and I could purchase some marijuana that I can absolutely guarantee you has no fentanyl in it. 100% certain there's no fentanyl in my marijuana because it's legal and it's tested. You want the people that are smoking marijuana in Ohio to not have to deal with any fentanyl in it? You had that chance, Ohio, in 2015. You could have voted yes on issue 3 and had hundreds, if not over 1,000 stores, even in Cincinnati, that would be selling cannabis products you could guarantee have no fentanyl in them. Yeah, but then Nick Lachey would get rich, or richer, and so I had to vote that down. This just say no attitude from the Hamilton County coroner is going to cost people's lives. She's getting people killed with this sort of attitude. You want to know whether or not someone's heroin is pure? Here's an idea. Set up some supervised injection facilities in Cincinnati, like they have in Vancouver, Canada, like they have all throughout Europe. Set up a supervised injection facility where someone brings in their own drugs. We're not talking about selling people drugs at these facilities. They bring in their own drugs. But a facility where they can get a clean needle if they're injection users, a facility where there's trained hospital staff there, trained medical staff there to administer Narcan, naloxone, should they overdose. In facilities like this in Vancouver, they have no overdose deaths. They have overdoses. They do have people that overdose, but they don't die because there's trained staff there to administer naloxone to make sure they don't die. This attitude out of Cincinnati is an attitude of, well, oh, well, if you know, we told you, we warned you that the heroin has some fentanyl in it, but you end up dying from it. So yeah, that's on you. That's on you. Never do these people for one second take into account the policies of prohibition they support are what have caused this problem in the first place. The whole reason we have an opioid epidemic right now is based on prohibition, is based on the war, not the war on drugs, but the war between drugs. This is a war between drugs. And this is our country giving the green light to pharmaceutical companies since 1993 to ramp up their production of these synthetic opiates, which they had told us were abuse resistant, tamper resistant, and actually turned out to be far more addictive than the problem they were supposed to solve. The other aspect of this that makes no sense is the economic aspect of it, right? You got the legit pill dealers and all that, but when you're talking about black market, I can understand the sense in adulterating some heroin with fentanyl. According to this story that I found on Vice News, Keegan Hamilton wrote this. It costs about $3,000 to $4,000 to produce a kilo of fentanyl. And that's about the same cost as it is to produce a kilo of heroin. So, if I'm selling a product that is an opiate, and my customer base is looking for the effect of an opiate, that body-numbing, super high effect of an opiate, for the same $2,000 to $3,000 to produce the kilo of heroin, I can instead produce a kilo of fentanyl that's 50 to 100 times stronger. Then I can take that fentanyl, I can add it to my weaker heroin product to make it sell better. That makes some mathematical sense. But to adulterate your cannabis with it doesn't make a lot of economic sense when the production of that kilo of cannabis can be in the tens of dollars when you're growing it at scale. It could cost very low compared to the $2,000 or $3,000 a kilo it costs to produce the fentanyl. So why am I going to take the expensive fentanyl and put it in the cheap marijuana? That to boost the price of the marijuana? There's only so far you can boost the price of the marijuana. You're never going to boost it to the $2,000 to $3,000 a kilo level that it costs to produce the fentanyl. This is the same sort of illogic they try to scare us with at Halloween, that we're somehow going to take a $15 medicated Chiba Chew and put it in a Halloween bag instead of a 5-cent Tootsie Roll. There's no economic benefit. And also, these people that make these claims about fentanyl-laced marijuana don't understand the drug market. People that are shopping for marijuana don't want that opiate high. They don't want that locked up body, couch locked, dazed and confused, drooling on the pillow kind of high. You sell them marijuana laced with fentanyl, and if it doesn't kill them, it's going to produce a high that's not what they're looking for, that's not what they're into. This would be like saying you're selling fentanyl-laced methamphetamine. What? People that want meth want the up, buzzy, active, alert high. They don't want the slow, couch lock, drooling on the pillow high. Drugs are not all the same. There are different types of drugs with different types of effects, and opiates and marijuana, pretty far away from each other when it comes to the recreational effect someone is looking for. So, I don't know. I don't know that it's completely false. I'm still going to hold out. I'm still going to hold off a little bit, kind of hedge my bet. Because I'm not saying it couldn't happen. I'm not saying people haven't done it. People mix all sorts of drugs for all sorts of reasons. Heroin and cocaine, you know, speedballs, all sorts of things that people do. Not saying it hasn't happened, but as some sort of part of the opiate epidemic, as if marijuana-laced fentanyl is anything to blame for any significant portion of the over 58,000 deaths we have every year from these drug overdoses, is just scaremongering designed to frighten us about marijuana. Once again, it's this idea that marijuana has been basically understood to be fairly harmless, fairly benign, so we can't scare the public unless we link it to something else that really is scary and really is dangerous. This is just another example of that. All right, we got to take a break. And when we come back, we'll wrap things up here at Delta 9 House and Studios. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Hey, Lindsay. I wish you didn't smoke weed. You're not the same when you smoke. And I miss my friend. I'll be outside.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to The Marijuana Agenda every weekday at mjagenda.com.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the voice of the industry from the National Cannabis Industry Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry, no food till this is done.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. And as we continue legalizing marijuana throughout the United States, sometimes some people have a kind of dismissive attitude post-legalization. Like, okay, it's legal now. Whoopee, we're done. And folks, I got to tell you, legalization is just the start of this fight. To rest on our laurels after passing legalization would be akin to doing nothing about civil rights after the Emancipation Proclamation. The Emancipation Proclamation freed the slaves, but it was 150 years before the Civil Rights Act. It was still another 3-4 years before interracial marriage was legalized. So we've got a long battle in front of us, and I want people to start to understand that the battle becomes a little more nuanced as we move on. At first, the battle is easy. It's A, stop locking people in a cage for a plant. Pretty simple battle. You know, marijuana is safer than alcohol. At least it's simple to understand. You can put it on a bumper sticker. But as we legalize, the debates become more nuanced. We have to start talking about our employment rights. Do we have the right to get a job, to not be fired simply because of the content of our body chemistry, simply because we choose cannabis instead of alcohol or tobacco? That's a fight we're going to be fighting for decades. The fight to not be denied housing, to not be denied organ transplants, to be protected in our child custody battles. All of these things, we are currently living as second-class citizens in most states. The mere use of our cannabis puts us in a different legal category where it is fair to discriminate against us. It's fair to take our kids. It's fair to deny us our guns. It's fair to fire us. It's fair to not hire us. It's fair to keep us out of places. All because of who we are. This is why I take this so seriously and so passionately, because I think a lot of people on the other side and people that are apathetic about the issue see pot smoking as an action. Right now, you're a person and you decided to grab that joint and light it and put it to your lips and inhale. You committed an action, and based on that action, we can discriminate against you. But I don't see it that way. I see my use of cannabis as a function of my personality, a function of my definition of myself. It's part of who I am. I'm not smoking pot right now. Got no joint in my hand. But I'm a pot smoker. I am a pot smoker right this moment, even though I'm not smoking pot. If I went without smoking pot for a month, I know, try and imagine. If I went without pot smoking for a month, would I then not be a pot smoker? No, I'd still be a pot smoker. Just like a Catholic who doesn't go to church for a year might still consider themselves a Catholic. See, our use of cannabis is more akin to our First Amendment rights of freedom of religion than it is to any action we're taking. To me, my use of cannabis, my belief in cannabis, and my belief in how cannabis should be treated in our society is a belief. And I am discriminated against because of that belief. Now, I know there's many people that fight this First Amendment battle with cannabis, and they frame it in terms of religion and that it's God and it's their sacrament that's determined this. I believe our First Amendment right is broader than that. I believe our First Amendment right doesn't require us to pledge fealty to imaginary metaphysical beings. I believe the idea of freedom of religion and freedom from religion is the idea that we have the right to live according to our conscience, live according to our beliefs, to our creeds, whether or not they involve a God or not, whether they involve a holy sacrament or not. I can believe what I want. I can express myself how I choose. I can be the kind of person I want to be. And I shouldn't be discriminated against over that. In my travel, in my employment, my health care, my child custody, my gun rights, anything. That's all the time I got. Thanks for joining us, folks. And please join as a patron on MJAgenda.com.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com. Yeah.
For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You take a seat, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.